The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Let me take the one question from the most interesting guy that I know in the press. That's you.
Mr. President, there had not been a U.S. service member killed in combat in Afghanistan since February of 2020. Do you bear any responsibility for the way that things have unfolded in the last 2 weeks?
I bear responsibility for fundamentally all that's happened of late. But here's the deal. You know, I wish you'd one day say these things. You know as well as I do that the former president made a deal with the Taliban. Remember that? I'm being serious. I'm asking you a question. Wait a minute. I'm asking you a question. Is that accurate, the best of you or not?
What?
I think they have an issue that people are likely to get hurt. Some, as we've seen, have gotten killed, and that it is messy.
And you said, a few days ago, you said you squarely stand by your decision to pull out.
Yes, I do, because look at it this way, folks. And I have another meaning, for real. But I have never been of the view that we should be sacrificing American lives to try to establish a democratic government in Afghanistan. Would we have ever gone? I know it's not fair to ask you questions. It's rhetorical, but raise your hand if you think we should have gone.
You're looking at a broken man there in more ways than one. That's Joe Biden at the tail end of his press conference, or his prepared remarks first, and then he opened it up for a few questions that he was instructed to call upon certain reporters, he said. Somebody gave him instructions. Somebody said, call on this one first, this one second, and so on. He came out, and keep in mind, this is about 7.5, 8 hours after the blast. Well, I guess there were two explosions. After the suicide attack, it took him 8 hours to finally come to the podium. And there he is. His voice was hoarse. He was soft-spoken. He really didn't show much life until Peter Doocy challenged him there at the end. Because, of course, they hate Fox News. That's the president of the United States. And he had quite a few people, prominent people, yesterday calling for his resignation, his removal, whatever. Somehow or another, he needs to be taken out. We're seeing his presidency, and it's an illegitimate one at that. But it's unraveling right before our eyes. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you tuning in with our growing audience, and we're thankful, too, for our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3, on their platform that gets you to the audio-only version of this this broadcast. The video presentation you can get only, solely, on our website, thetrumpet.com, every day at the broadcast time, whatever that happens to be for you and your time zone. You get a banner at the trumpet.com homepage that tells you the show's about to come on. You can go to the live stream page if you type in thetrumpet.com/live. And, of course, there you can also get to the podcasts. We post these programs as quick as we can, maybe a couple of hours after the live stream is over. So we're getting reports now today. Yesterday, of course, it was happening even as we were going to air, so we didn't know the extent of it. But now we're getting reports that 170 Afghans killed in this suicide blast. I mean, this, and then you have the 13 Marines, you have 15 other servicemen that maybe are maimed for life because of this? Limbs, body limbs, all over the place outside that airport. You heard about the 5-year-old girl who blew up right in her father's arms. These had to be massive bombs to kill nearly 200 people. As crowded as that area might have been, this was a powerful explosive. And two of them got through. And guess who's manning the perimeter? That would be the Taliban. And just somehow or another, there's all this chatter about ISIS-K. The Taliban let them through. And yet you listen to U.S. leadership. Oh, no, we don't believe that. We don't believe that for a second. How could the Taliban let some ISIS-K suicide bomber through? That would never happen. Just 2 seconds ago, the Taliban was sweeping right across the country with all of these revenge killings, raping and murdering as they went, and you had people flooding to the airport to get away from who? To get away from the Taliban. And now they bring up ISIS-K 2 days ago, 3 days ago. And now suddenly the Taliban, they're our friends, they're our partners. I mean, this is unbelievable what's happening. The thinking of our leaders today. This is Isaiah 3, straight out of prophecy, isn't it? God says the mighty man, he's going to take away the whole stay of water, the bread, all of our blessings. They're just going to evaporate away. God's going to take them away. And also, verse 2 of Isaiah 3, he takes away the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the prudent and the ancient. He's taking away the strong leaders, the mighty man, the man of war. I mean, you listen to General McKenzie yesterday, and it's like he's a robot talking there for just a few minutes. The deadliest attack on U.S. forces in Afghanistan in more than a decade. And it's coming under Biden's watch following this disastrous evacuation. And he's there just talking as if it's another day in the office. What a humiliating defeat this is. And it's not over. It's not over. You look at some of the press reports last night. Of course, you're worried for the American citizens stranded, trapped. But what about the 5,000 soldiers? They're in this little airport with one runway, surrounded by hills, 4.5 million people, so a densely populated area. And in the next few days, they've got to get all of their equipment, all of the soldiers out on these slow-moving cargo planes, and pretty big at that, a pretty big target. There was a report this morning from Sky News that an Italian military aircraft leaving Kabul, that it came under fire. There were shots. So what happens if this is just the first of many attacks? There's Reuters and everyone else saying that the military, our troops, right there in Kabul, they're bracing themselves for more attacks. You wonder if I talked about the refugee crisis yesterday, that it's already started. You wonder, the hostage crisis, I should say. You wonder if some of the soldiers are going to come into that category. Now, hopefully they'll get out. But they're not at an airport like Bagram Airfield that's easy to defend. They're at one where there's who knows who is on which side. And weapons, of course, weapons scattered all over the place. Well, we left them all behind. Military vehicles, thousands and thousands of machine guns, grenade launchers. This is going from bad to worse in a hurry. And then you have just all the ordinary people that are still risking their lives, crowding up next to the airport in hopes that they can escape from the Taliban. You know, the ones controlling the checkpoints? No, they would never help ISIS, a suicide bomber, to get through. Never, never, never. We can trust the Taliban now. Now they're our partners. I mean, this is really, it's unbelievable stuff. You can't make it up. We're seeing a presidency unravel, and really what we're seeing is the leadership that the United States used to provide the world. We're seeing that completely unravel. Now look at what the prophecies say. This is from U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. Mr. Armstrong says, "Do you think so great a fall could not come to so great powers as Britain and America? Do you say it can't happen here? Do you think the great God who was able to give them such unprecedented world leadership and power and wealth is not able to take it away from them and throw them, like their ancient forefathers, back into slavery? You think it can't happen? We've got 5,000 soldiers there. We can't even provide them with air cover because they're right in the midst of this huge city, this population center. This is, this really favors the bad guys, so to speak." It says here, "You need to open your eyes to the fact that Britain's sun already has set. You need to wake up to the fact that the United States, even still possessing unmatched power, is afraid, fears to use it. Just as God said, I'll break the pride of your power." Here's the fake president saying that, you know, if we need to send in more troops, well, we'll go ahead and do it. But I think we can get by with what we have. I think we can complete the mission. He thinks everything's going according to plan. You heard him there in the opening montage. Do you accept responsibility? Yeah, I do, but bad orange man. It's Donald Trump's fault. Still they're on that. They'll be using that for as long as they're in office. For as long as God allows that to continue. It says here, I'll break the pride of your power. It says that the United States has stopped winning wars, that America was unable, with all of its vast power, to conquer little North Vietnam. The United States is fast riding to the greatest fall that ever befell any nation. The handwriting is on the wall. That's what we're witnessing. The greatest fall that ever befell any nation. That verse that Mr. Armstrong referred to, it's straight out of Leviticus 26. God says, "And if you will not for all this hearken to me, then I will punish you 7 times more for your sins." And then he says in verse 19, "I'll break the pride of your power." And then verse 20, "And your strength shall be spent in vain." What about the $2 trillion, 20 years? We pushed the Taliban into the mountain ranges, into Pakistan. You've had American rule basically for 20 years. There are tens of thousands of young women, 20 somethings, who've basically grown up in a nation controlled or ruled by the American forces, together with the former Afghan government, very much westernized. These girls probably getting a Western education, probably having opportunity that they certainly would not have had before the year 2001, before 9/11, because then they were living under Taliban rule. And so now the Taliban's back. Now all these women, they're going to have to be covered head to toe. They're not going to be educated like they once were. And some of them are going to be forced into marriages, raped. This is their new life. No wonder they're desperate to get to the United States. You know, that evil nation that's systemically racist through and through. That's what we want to teach our children in this nation. We want to teach them how horrible the United States is. Well, tell that to these young Afghan women. People still risking their lives, risking having their children blown up in front of them, so that they can hopefully get on one of those planes that might be fired upon in these next few days. What an explosive brew this is. A ticking time bomb, if ever there was one. The humiliation. And to come out and to try to put a positive spin on this, it's not working. It's not working. That's why you have the fake president of the United States putting his face in his hands. A broken man reading from a script. Here's what I've been instructed to do. I've got another meeting to get to. Another meeting? On what? The American people were waiting for 8 hours. Boris Johnson, all these other world leaders had a statement pretty quickly. And nothing from the White House. Not for 8 hours. I will break the pride of your power. Your strength will be spent in vain. Here's what we said back in November of 2001. Does America have the will to see it through? Do we have the will to see it through? What happens if American soldiers begin to die, or if retaliatory terrorist attacks on American soil intensify? Would the unanimity of public opinion fracture? Would fear intensify and determination falter? That's the trumpet forecast from 20 years ago. Tomorrow's news today, verse 21, it says, "And if you will walk contrary unto me and will not hearken unto me, I will bring 7 times more plagues upon you according to your sins." See, God's just going to keep putting on more and more intense pressure in the hopes that we'll turn to him, like I was saying yesterday, that we'll repent, that we'll call upon him to save us. He's the only one that can do it. America, there's no help for America. That's what 2 Kings 14 says. And here are these communists that rigged an election to get in this puppet. And his brief presidency it's unraveling. This is from the Telegraph this morning. Joe Biden now has not only Afghan but American blood on his hands, and it will stain his presidency forever. Kabul Airport will be Mr. Biden's Saigon, his Iran hostage crisis, his Watergate, and it's no one's fault but his own. You can keep blaming Donald Trump all that you want, but this is on you. It says, "We're slowly learning the full extent of Mr. Biden's culpability for the Afghanistan debacle. Throughout this chaotic operation, and despite dissent from allies, he seemed to have an unshakable belief that he was right." It's like he said in 2008 when he was running for president. I mean, do you think you can save the world? Yes, I do. I mean, the hubris on display, the vanity and the arrogance of these people. Of course, behind him is Barack Obama. He finally tweeted out something an hour or so ago. He didn't have much to say yesterday either. I mean, you've got Donald Trump sounding like the only adult in the room in the clip that Hannity played on his show last night. He actually sounded like, okay, here's someone that's got some leadership ability and the right kind of confidence. Confidence in his country. But he just moved forward. The Antiochus administration goes forward. It says, "For nearly 50 years, Biden has been wrong on a host of foreign policy issues. Now we have a deadly new chapter in that long litany of failure." His track record is not so good, even when he was in the Senate. I think one of the former defense secretaries said that he was just about wrong on every foreign policy there was in his Senate career. The Spectator, also from across the pond, it says, "America's frantic, confused exit from Afghanistan was a humiliating shambles even before today's terrorist attack. Now it's something much worse. It's a deadly tragedy, leaving victims dead and injured and trapping thousands of Americans and friendly Afghans in a lethal environment where terrorists roam free." They're just roaming free right around the airport perimeter. The checkpoint's controlled by Taliban. And 5,000 American soldiers right there in the bowl. It says, "There will be a huge political price to pay for this unfolding disaster." See, it's unfolding. It's not quite over yet. And President Biden will pay it. This deadly fiasco didn't just happen on his watch. It happened because of his decisions. A series of fundamentally bad ones taken by the president himself. Who takes out all the troops and leaves all the military equipment behind for the Taliban and leaves all the American citizens and the Afghan translators and such? Catastrophic decisions. And now we see this yesterday. And we knew it was coming. All these intel sources. Biden himself said it on Tuesday. Then the intel sources coming from Britain, even Russia. Even Russia was warning us. I think there's going to be a suicide attack at the airport. So we knew it was coming. We had really good intel there. But as far as the Taliban sweeping across Afghanistan a few weeks ago, yeah, it just caught us by surprise. We knew nothing about that. We didn't know it was going to be 11 days and it falls to the Taliban. And people are running for the airport to get out of the country. And then Tuesday, the fake president mentions ISIS-K. ISIS-K, what is this? Who are they? Well, they're the enemy now. The Taliban, they're our partners. That's how it works. One catastrophic decision after another. Listen to Joe Biden yesterday. And I think it goes on a couple minutes here, but listen to just how favorable the comments are toward the Taliban, America's newest partner in the Afghanistan wasteland. Here's clip three.
We've been made aware by our intelligence community that the ISIS-K, an arch enemy, the Taliban, people who were freed when both those prisons were opened, has been planning a complex set of attacks on the United States personnel and others.
There's been some criticism, even from people in your party, about the dependence on the Taliban to secure the perimeter of the airport. Do you feel like there was a mistake made in that regard?
No, I don't. Look, I think General McKenzie handled this question very well. There is no evidence thus far that I've been given as a consequence by any of our commanders in the field that there has been collusion between the Taliban and ISIS. There will be, I believe, numerous opportunities to continue to provide access for additional persons to get out. Means that we provide and or are provided through and cooperation with the Taliban.
There are reports that U.S. officials provided the Taliban with names of Americans and Afghan officials to evacuate. Were you aware of that? Did that happen?
And there have been occasions when our military has contacted their military counterparts in the Taliban and said, this, for example, this bus is coming through with X number of people on it, made up of the following group of people. We want you to let that bus or that group through. So, yes, there have been occasions like that, but I can't tell you with any certitude that there's actually been a list of names. I know there may have been, but I know of no circumstance. It doesn't mean it didn't exist.
It does exist, all right. That list of names, Politico reported that yesterday. This is from Politico. U.S. officials in Kabul gave the Taliban a list of names of American citizens, green card holders, and Afghan allies to grant entry into the militant-controlled outer perimeter of the city's airport. We gave them a list of names of loyal allies, of American citizens, and said, hey, can you go ahead and let these people through to the airport since we're now partners? The Taliban have the names. And who knows who else has the names by this point? I mean, this is treasonous behavior. And this is the silly little children running the U.S. military or the operations there in the Middle East. General McKenzie, General Milley! I mean, it just leaves you speechless. What do you even say? You turned in our own people? It's essentially what's happened. We'll get to that more when we come back from a brief break. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, you can send us a comment, td@thetrumpet.com. And also, if you'd like to order The United States and Britain in Prophecy, I just quoted from that a few minutes ago. Our operators are standing by. The toll-free number is 1-866-930-3024. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
We now know that due to the negligence of this administration, the Taliban now has access to over $85 billion worth of American military equipment. That includes 75,000 vehicles, over 200 airplanes and helicopters, over 600,000 small arms and light weapons. The Taliban now has more Black Hawk helicopters than 85% of the countries in the world. And unbelievably, the Taliban now has biometric devices, which have the fingerprints, eye scans, and the biographical information of the Afghans who helped us over the last 20 years.
That's Congressman Jim Banks from earlier this week talking about all the gifts that we left to the Taliban. How we gave them an Air Force, basically, all of these military vehicles. And then they've also got all this biometrics equipment with information on them that exposes who all of our allies are. That's right. This is from that Politico story I read before the break. It says, the move, detailed to Politico by three U.S. and congressional officials, was designed to expedite the evacuation of tens of thousands of people from Afghanistan as chaos erupted in Afghanistan's capital city last week after the Taliban seized control of the country. It also came as the Biden administration has been relying on the Taliban for security outside the airport. We're relying on the Taliban. These are the people we went in to fight against at the start of this operation 20 years ago. And now, I mean, the situation is so fluid. It's changing every second, it seems. But somewhere along the way here in the last week or two, they became our allies, or at least it became known to those of us who are following the events. In fact, behind the scenes, and you only hear this here or read about it at our Trumpet magazine, the website, the Trumpet Briefs, you've got an Antiochus who's very active in the background, whose track record is one of empowering radical Islamist movements. See the mullahs in Iran. See the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And now the Taliban and ISIS and all the other players. And they're really just interchangeable parts. They can move. You can. I'm sure there's some that hate the others. But there's also plenty in this region that are just easily paid off or bribed. If it suits their purpose to flip sides, that's no problem. They would all rejoice at the sight of American troops being humiliated and killed on the way out. Oh, yes, they would celebrate this. There's lots of celebrations, I'm sure, in Taliban circles over what happened yesterday. But of course, the spokesman, the official, he comes out and he really condemns the attack because this is a legitimate government now. They're being accepted by the United States of America. What a turnaround. What a change. It says the decision to provide specific names to the Taliban, which has a history of brutally murdering Afghans who collaborate with the U.S. and other coalition forces during the conflict, has angered lawmakers and military officials. Why, there's people saying that some of these military officials who signed off on this, they need to go to Leavenworth. They need to be put in prison. These are traitors. And they're going to have blood on their hands, just like Joe Biden does, following the attack yesterday. Politico says basically they just put all those Afghans on a kill list, said one defense official, who, like others, spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss a sensitive topic. You got to be careful when you come out against the communists this way. Or if you just sound like an ordinary American, like Donald Trump, he comes out with a statement. They play it on Sean Hannity. Hannity puts it on YouTube, and YouTube immediately takes it down. Donald Trump! But the Taliban official, now that's different. He's an actual official. We want to give him a platform after all. We trust him. He's a partner. You dig into the Quran about how they operate, how they lie, how they cheat, how they steal, how all of that's justified. So long as you can kill the infidel, so long as you can conquer the infidel. And now, of course, it's so dangerous. A lot of the reporters have fled the scene. And so how are we to know? I guess we just take the Taliban's word for it. If these terrorists have a kill list, if they can go from house to house, if they have the cell numbers or the addresses of Americans or Afghan allies, and they start killing them off, I guess, well, how are you going to know who did it? Was it Al-Qaeda? Was it ISIS-K? Well, it surely wasn't the Taliban. I mean, they're operating the checkpoints outside the outside the airport. They're helping us. They say they are. And I have no reason to believe that they would ever consider letting ISIS-K come through the checkpoints. That's what General McKenzie said yesterday. Listen to the leader, the commander, the general presiding over American forces. Listen to some of his comments from yesterday, clip two.
At this time, we know that 12 U.S. service members have been killed in the attack, and 15 more service members have been injured. A number of Afghan civilians were also killed and injured in the attack. Their loss weighs heavily on us all, and I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through my prepared remarks. Finally, I'd like to offer my profound condolences to the families of our servicemen and women and Afghan civilians who lost their lives today. We have put more than 5,000 U.S. service members at risk to save as many civilians as we can. It's a noble mission, and today we have seen firsthand how dangerous that mission is, and we expect those attacks to continue, and we're doing everything we can to be prepared for those attacks. That includes reaching out to the Taliban, who are actually providing the outer security cordon around the airfield, to make sure they know what we expect them to do to protect us, and we will continue to coordinate with them as they go forward. There's no substitute for a young for a young man or woman, a young United States man or woman, standing up there conducting a search of that person before we let them on. Now, the Taliban have conducted searches before they get to that point, and sometimes those searches have been good and sometimes not. I will simply note that before this attack, we had passed 104,000 people through. Now, the other thing we do is we share versions of this information with the Taliban so that they can actually do some searching out there for us, and we believe that some attacks have been thwarted by them. Again, we've been doing this for a long, we've been doing this since the 14th. All of these systems are being applied in defense of the airfield, all of them on a continual basis, all of them vectored by the intelligence that we receive, and that we, and then we also use the Taliban as a tool to protect us as much as possible.
Do you still trust the Taliban, and is it possible that they let this happen?
So as to whether or not they let it happen, I don't know. I don't think there's anything to convince me that they let it happen. As to whether or not I trust them, that's not necessarily a word I use very carefully.
So it's all carefully worded, but you read between the lines there. I don't have any evidence to suggest that they let the suicide bombers on through. Furthermore, there's evidence suggesting that they're actually thwarting attacks. They're helping us. The Taliban helping the United States of America. That's the most senior officer presiding over the American troops in Afghanistan, the evacuation process, the full retreat. And boy, even his comments about the carnage from yesterday. I mean, I think it would be okay to show a little bit of emotion. To vow that you'll find the perpetrators behind this attack and exercise some vengeance. I mean, it's war after all, is it not? Even the fake president yesterday, and of course he won't follow through on it, but he said he was going to find the perpetrators. Isaiah 3, as I say. Look at all the people that this benefits. It certainly benefits the communists in government in the United States of America. Barack Obama, all of his anti-American sentiments, the ones that think America is just evil through and through, the systemic racism, we've got to get this into our education. You've got to see just how horrible America and its history has been from the very beginning. Its beginning is back to 1619, in fact. Started on slavery, and that's the way it's been from the beginning all the way through to today. So it benefits them. It certainly benefits the ones I've noted here in recent days. Russia, China. This Wall Street Journal piece, Taliban takeover is a boon for the cash-strapped nation of Iran. It's a boon for Iran. It sure does help Iran. And yet, look at the Israelite leadership. Look at the weak leaders. Like what you're seeing in the military. Like what you're seeing in the White House. This is from the Globe and Mail in Canada. It says, the Canadian government is warning those left behind in Kabul not to expect any more evacuation flights and advising them to shelter in place after it halted efforts to airlift Canadian nationals and Afghan refugees from Taliban-controlled Afghanistan. There's nothing more we can do, says Trudeau's government. You're just going to have to hide out in Afghanistan. It says here, in a message sent by email and text Thursday to people still in Afghanistan, including Canadian citizens, Ottawa warned that no further Canadian evacuation flights are being planned and urged recipients to find safe locations indoors to hide until such time as the security situation stabilizes. To hide out indoors until it's secure. It says the last Canadian evacuation flight left Kabul Thursday. Trudeau said, I understand the heartbreak of those who were not able to get out. I understand. Speaking in Quebec City, Mr. Trudeau would not take personal responsibility for the failure to evacuate Canadians, as well as Afghan interpreters, fixers, and support staff who were promised asylum in Canada. They were promised safety. And now we've proven to be an unreliable ally, as world leaders from all over the world have admitted. They've said as much. Even Western leaders. How can we trust the United States going forward? How can they lead another NATO expedition? How can they lead another European exercise? How are we going to get behind the United States mission from this point forward if this is the way they leave their allies hanging, just out, hanging high and dry? Isaiah 3, God said, I'm going to take away the mighty man, the military man, the man of war, the leaders. And that prophecy is certainly being fulfilled. No help. No help for the United States. And then Donald Trump, the one leader who still at least sounds like a pro-American, confident leader, he's the one that gets blotted off of social media. Listen to him last night, a statement that he prepared for Sean Hannity's show, clip 4.
As one nation, America mourns the loss of our brave and brilliant American service members in a savage and barbaric terrorist attack in Afghanistan. These noble American warriors laid down their lives in the line of duty. They sacrificed themselves for the country that they loved, racing against time to rescue their fellow citizens from harm's way. They died as American heroes, and our nation will honor their memory forever. I want to express my deepest condolences to the families of those we have lost. Today, all Americans grieve alongside you. Together, we also pray that God will heal the other courageous American service members who were wounded in this heinous attack. In addition, our hearts are with the families of all the innocent civilians who died, and with the many men, women, and children who were terribly injured in this act of evil.
Act of evil, pretty strong words. And boy, when you compare that speech, just a short little 2-minute speech, when you compare it to Joe Biden coming out, who's obviously lost a step, it's quite a shocking difference in many ways. Play the rest from that statement last night. This is clip 5.
This tragedy should never have taken place. It should never have happened, and it would not have happened if I were your president. Over the past few weeks, I know that many Americans have felt profound sorrow and even pain watching the events taking place in Afghanistan, and perhaps none more so than the veterans of that 20-year war. Many of them answered the call proudly and without hesitation after the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. Every American who served in Afghanistan has made tremendous sacrifices for our country. On behalf of your fellow citizens, I want you to know that those sacrifices were not made in vain. We know what you did, we know how brave you were, and we thank you. We salute you, and we honor you for all time.
In stark contrast, you had Joe Biden yesterday begin his speech by drawing comparisons between his son, who served for a time in the military, and then died later of brain cancer. As difficult and as tragic as that would be to go through as a father, as a mother. But a very strange comparison. His son wasn't blown up in a suicide attack. And then here's Donald Trump, together with his speechwriters, getting a message out there pretty quickly, showing some leadership. You wonder, leaving aside the military brass, those at the top, that are obviously woke in every respect, you wonder about the rest in the military. Who would they rather have as commander-in-chief? Isaiah 3 being fulfilled. we've said before about the need. We saw it with the demise of the Worldwide Church of God, the Laodicean era of God's church. The lack of courage, and my father in Malachi's message saying that spiritual courage may be our greatest need today. And even on the national level, look at how much weakness. You saw it in that statement from the Canadian government. So much weakness. A lack of courage. We're all familiar with this example in 1 Samuel 17. It says in verse 4, "And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span." So here comes this towering monster, and all of Israel just terrified, scared to death. No one was willing to stand up to him. Verse 10 says, "And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." And when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They were all cowards. No one had faith. No one had faith to fight for the armies of God. No one had faith to stand up and fight for God. Verse 19 says, "Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistine." Fighting with the Philistine, it says in verse 20, "And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper and took and went, and as Jesse had commanded him, and he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle." So he went to the battlefield. He was going to provide some physical sustenance to his brothers and to some of the other soldiers. Verse 21 says, "And Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army, and David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, and he ran into the army and came and saluted his brothers." He came and saluted his family. He wanted to see what was happening, what was going on in the battle. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, and of the armies of the Philistines, and spoke according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, verse 24 says, when they saw the man, they fled from him and were sore afraid. They fled from Goliath. I mean, they would fight for Israel only to a point, only if it was kind of easy, only if it wasn't too dangerous. But I mean, this Goliath, this giant, this towering enemy. Verse 25 says, "And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up? And it shall be that the man who kills him, and the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter," and so on. And David spoke, verse 26, "And David spoke to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Who does he think he is? He's fighting against God. And we're on the side of God. We're on the side of good. We're on the side of obedience. We're fighting for God. Verse 27, "And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that kills him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spoke unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, why came you down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the naughtiness of your heart. For you are come down, it says, that you might see the battle. Why did you leave those few sheep behind? You're nobody. Get back into the hills with your sheep. I know your heart. I know you're here to promote yourself. I know that you're just thinking about your desires and not others. It says, and David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? Isn't there a cause to stand up for God and to fight? Isn't this a time to show some courage? Isn't this the time to be a real leader, to be a real man, a man of war if necessary? Isn't this cause enough to grab our weapons and to go forward? That's quite a fighting spirit that this young man had. It says, and when the words were heard, which David spoke, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. When no one else would step forward in the battle, when no one else would step forward and take the lead, it was left to this young teenager to go and fight for God. Now, that's some courage. That's some faith. David believed that God would protect him, that God would help him, that God would guide him. And spiritually, we're nothing apart from God. Our adversary will devour us if we don't look to God as our helper, as our protector. We need this kind of fighting spirit. We need spiritual courage. Because like my father says in Malachi's message, all the other virtues are of little or no value if you don't have the courage. If you don't have the courage to fight for God, then what good will the other virtues be? We have to go on the offensive. We have to go out and fight for God. Verse 37, David said, moreover, the Lord has delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear. He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Eternal be with you. All right, if you're so insistent on going, go ahead, and God be with you. And you know some of the rest of this story. Saul wanted to put him in all of this armor, this heavy armor that he wasn't accustomed to wearing, and David wouldn't do it. He just went with what he was good at. He had developed his talents. He was quite good with the sling. And so he got the smooth stones. He was ready to go, and he went out into the battlefield. I'll have to jump ahead to verse 45 here. It says, then said David to the Philistine, you came to me with a sword. I mean, the Philistine just laughed at him and mocked him. And David's answer, you came with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to you in the name of the Eternal of Hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. You have defied the armies of God. I'm here representing God. I'm here with courage because God lives in me. God will back me. God will empower me, and God's going to take you down. God's going to smite you. It's a wonderful, inspiring, uplifting account taken from 1 Samuel 17. You can see why God set this man apart, this young man, set him apart as king, king of Israel. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you so much for joining us all through this busy week of broadcasting. Don't forget to submit some feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks again for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you Monday.